Baroness Nicholson of Winterbourne is a peer of the realm and a member of the House of Lords. She serves as the Prime Minister's trade envoy to Azerbaijan, the Republic of Iraq, and Turkmenistan, and co-chairs the all-party parliamentary groups of sexual violence and conflict. In her private time, she chairs the Amar International Charitable Foundation, which does a wonderful work throughout the world. The Associația Children's High Level Group in Romania, and the Russian Booker Prize. She is vice chair of the Man Booker Prize for Fiction and patron of the Kane Prize for African Writing. She's also vice president of the Mary Hare School of Deaf Children. In 1999, Baroness Nicholson was elected to the Southeast region of the European Parliament and was re-elected to serve from 2004 to 2009. From 2011 to 2014, she sat on the Parliamentary Council of Europe in Strasbourg. She studied at the Royal Academy of Music, then entered the information technology industry, where she developed computer software, built computer systems, and managed contracts in the United Kingdom and Africa. As you can tell, she does very well at a large number of things. Baroness Nicholson has been awarded 7 honorary doctorates, has published 2 books, has edited various others. For her outstanding life and contributions to society and to the world, Brigham Young University is pleased to confer upon Baroness Nicholson of Winterbourne the degree of Doctor of International Leadership and Humanitarian Service, honoris causa. I would invite Vice Presidents Richardson and Webb to take part in the Hood ceremony. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We are now honored to have Baroness Nicholson address us.
Your Excellencies, Presidents and Vice Presidents, graduates and your families, I stand humbled to become one of your newest alumni of one of the most prestigious universities in the globe. I follow in the eminent steps of President Dieter F. Uchtdorf and Dick Cheney and other eminent people. Our university, and I can call it that now, is widely known and internationally renowned for the breadth and depth of its study. It is globally respected, for it produces graduates, such as yourselves, who are tolerant yet critical in thinking, who respect and honour the other while respecting and honouring yourselves. My own experience of this wonderful establishment stretches over 5 years now, and my pride at being accepted into its honoured halls is probably even higher than yours. How did I come to be one of your companions? Well, we share common values, you and I. We strive for common goals. But like all good things, my relationship with you starts with one person, making an acquaintance that just grew and grew. Jim Olson was that man. We met in the Department of Defense when we were discussing a huge conference on public health provision for people in greatest need. We found we had a common interest between us in the public good, a shared concern, a lifelong concern for the outsider, for the other one in need of friendship, fellowship, and support. In other words, we found our common values, our common goals were shared. On Jim's introduction, I caught a flight from Washington to Salt Lake City, and all sorts of fascinating personalities emerged. And vastly important for someone with my interests, I found that my new friend's work was similar, but most probably considerably better than my own, and that it was carried out for just the same purpose: conquering poverty, building local skills, giving people pride in their own work, and bringing international standards of performance and service delivery in their own hands to the world's poorest and most desperate people. implementing all aspects of the United Nations Convention for Human Rights, freedom, democracy, the rule of law, including the all-important freedom to worship. So we made friends. Sharon Eubank and her amazing colleagues led me to form a deep and powerful partnership with LDS Charities and the Armagh Society, which I chair. While Elder Holland, the high academic, theologian, and man of compassion, brought me early to Brigham Young University and introduced me to your great thinker and powerful teacher, President Worthen himself. And I found our discussions here with both Elder Holland and President Worthen in BYU so fascinating and so important that I set up following meetings in my place of work, Britain's upper chamber, the House of Lords. And in that ancient palace, royal palace, large parts of which date back to the 11th century, Elder Holland became the first BYU eminence to address a formal British political meeting in Parliament. And we did much, much more. Together, and with the backing of Sharon's Eubank's refugee knowledge and the professional teams of doctors and nurses and teachers of Armagh, I set up a unique conference cycle on religious persecution and its inevitable outcome of forced migration. And for our first conference in September of last year, we brought together leading Mormons, academics, the Bishop of Derby, Canon Ed Newell of Cumberland Lodge, and other ordinands of our national church, the Church of England, a Jewish Ashkenazi rabbi, Syrian of refugee family, some Yazidis, all victims of IS, the notorious death cult in northern Iraq, Shia and Sunni Iraqis of the Armagh team, plus Native Americans. We met in another unique setting, Windsor Castle, St. George's House. We were welcomed by the governor of the castle, who spoke on behalf of Her Majesty the Queen. Our findings were listened to and studied in the highest circles, and our findings have benefited some of the world's most persecuted faiths internationally. But we've just begun, and our next meeting in that same historic setting is this September. Our theme will be integration after persecution. And at the base of our thinking will be the sharing of common values, plus the critical place of the rule of law. This reminds us of the need to create the laws internationally initially, whereby freedom to speak, to move, to earn, to worship is not a matter of whim, nor is it one bound by personal rulers' tastes, but it is one which Parliament, or its national equivalent, has laid down as obligatory for all citizens to follow. I am a working politician, and I see the world's populations in that light. I look at their sufferings, and I turn to find a mix of possible solutions to give them success, to free themselves. And one absolute essential in a modern functioning society is the university. All around the globe, major universities hold in their keeping science, technology, the arts and cultures in their halls of learning and research establishments. And from high quality universities, such as BYU, come our future leaders in all walks of life and all societies. For our professors and dons open up vistas of thought and imagination while ensuring that critical thinking is the foundation stone of learning. Even in societies where public opinion expression is heavily constrained, universities are granted considerable license, since almost all society recognize that human thoughts and values enshrined in learning are the futures of their own societies. But only when universities and other professional institutions are assaulted do we outsiders wake up and recognize that a civilization is ending, albeit temporarily. The burning of the libraries of Alexandria lead directly to the destruction of ancient seats of learning and worship in the Nineveh Plains today. But to have intellectual strength, we must accompany that by action. In Ammar, now twinned with LDS charities, we are the deliverers of your love to millions of others. We think of healing in all its aspects. And working up the next thinking for BYU and for myself in the House of Lords, I'm even using one of your professors, one of your academics, Paul Kerry, and I thank President Worthen so very much for allowing us that chance to work together. It is my view that building the professions is the key. Every dictatorship deliberately destroys their nation's academic and professional heritage. Doctors, academics, teachers, those are the men and women who are hunted down and destroyed by iconoclasts, by mob rule, and by dictators. Today, in London's famous Royal Academy of Arts, 300 years old, we have two wonderful exhibitions. One is the onset of communism in Russia and in the Soviet Union in the 1900s up to the 1930s. There is a list, beginning and endless, of the men and women destroyed, the professors, the teachers, the doctors, the nurses, all of those who had the knowledge and who had the wish to give it to others. Just a floor upstairs, there is an exhibition on the American Fool, the economic collapse that also happened in the 1930s. And again, you see people struggling to survive. In the Russian exhibition, you see mob rule killing people. Upstairs, you see the hope of everything getting better. I'm so proud to be in your ranks. Count me in as one of you, ready with all of the knowledge and experience that life has given me. I will be using it, if you allow me, to help you succeed. Call on me any time, ask me your question, visit me in the House of Lords, and make demands on me which will enhance your understanding of our common heritage, our shared values, and our pursuit of freedom for all humanity. And a final thought is just one person who counts. Some weeks ago, I was on the Mosul front line with a very deeply satisfying duty of equipping a small frontline hospital fully and completely, from beds right the way through to all the surgical needs. Full of wounded people, full of people in despair, full of people who might not survive, with patients coming in from the front line of the Mosul battle. On one of the beds, the new beds that I had just delivered, sat a miserable, tiny boy, something over two to three years old, I thought. Completely silent, his face was motionless, he was not moving at all. He was with his mother, who was pregnant. I asked her, what happened? Why has he distanced himself so completely? I looked at him and she said, look at his hair. And he had a shock of hair, but on his scalp were big blank patches, most extraordinary. I said, what happened? She said, ISIL came into our house, they looked at him, they picked him up by the hair and they just swung him round like a toy. And they came back and they did that again and again. He hasn't spoken since. I had one of my colleagues with me with his camera. He leant forward and he took a little picture of the boy. And he turned the camera around and he showed him his picture. Very surprisingly, his eyes caught his own face and he looked. And suddenly, he smiled. A wonderful moment to remind us all that saving just one life, giving that little boy hope, is worth all of the effort that we can put in. I congratulate you. I honor you for your achievements. I look forward to learning of your successes, and I thank you very much for allowing me to be part of you. Thank you.